Looking for a fun way to win up to 25 times your money this basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100 and use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit matchup to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code PLAY100. That's code PLAY100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC and the fourth episode this week. Don't say we don't spoil you. This was originally actually going to be a two-parter. We were going to split Liga and the Primeira into one episode, but we had so much fun talking with Alex that we actually decided that it should go out on its own, have its own platform to stand on. So we come to you with one final preview episode for this week. We will, of course, go to Spain and Italy next week in those preview shows. So it means that we're going to have six preview episodes in our season, big season preview special series. My name is Jack Collins, and joining me today, Mr. Sam Tyler Rank God. How are you doing, mate?
Hello, mate. Still here, still ready to go. New league. Oh. Let's go.
Let's do it. Let's do it. We keep running. And our transfer guru, Mr. Dean Jones. But DJ, you are taking on a different role today. We're doing a big drum roll. Role switch.
Well, at least I've got a role this time. I've missed that. I haven't been on the last two, so thanks for including me on this one. Thanks for making me worthy and thinking, oh, we could get him to ask some questions of us and make him feel like he's worth having as part of the team. So thanks.
Mate, you know we work around you. This is the
I appreciate you for carrying the last two, really. So cheers for that.
Yeah, and Dean got here just trying to fob off his childcare concerns. It's something completely different.
Yeah, summer holidays are ridiculous. Complete chaos over here, so thanks. Anyway, let's start by reflecting on the season in Portugal last season and just, you know, remember where we were at when Porto, the mighty Porto, won the league. So they won the league with 91 points and finished 6 points clear of Sporting in second. Benfica came up in third. And then Braga were the best of the rest, and they came fourth. Now, there was a lot of disparity, really, though, between the numbers of all these league positions. So I said, obviously, Porto won the league by 6 points. Sporting were 11 points clear of Benfica in third. And in turn, they were 9 points clear of Braga in fourth. So Porto and Sporting were quite clear of the rest. And now, into the new season, we're going to break down, or you two are going to break down, whether this is going to become any closer, whether it's again going to be a two-horse race, I guess, or whether Benfica can lodge a better challenge to catch them. I doubt anybody else is going to be in the conversation at the end of the season, but you never
not
know.
Not for the title, I don't think.
No, don't think for the title, but you never know. Someone might be able to get in third, so let's see whether they can do that. I think that just makes sense to start with FC Porto, a team we've obviously seen the most of last season. Got to see them in person a couple of times. Hopefully we do that again, but... Where have they changed? What do you see happening for this team of reigning champions?
Yeah, it's a really interesting thing because obviously this is, Porto last season were brilliant. They broke the Primeira record. They got 91 points. We're looking here at a spell of dominance. They won three of the last five league titles. It feels like they are... the team to beat, not just as reigning champions, but kind of the team who are, most dominant in this era. And I think that's quite interesting. I think what else is kind of new here is that we're looking at Porto, and over the last few years, they have won titles despite losing their best players time and time again. But this is probably Conceição's biggest challenge yet, because much as he squeezed so much out of players and squeezed so much out of the teams around him, he lost Luis Diaz in January. He's now lost Vitinha and Fabio Vieira. There's a lot going on here where you're like, where is your creativity coming from? And how do you get the boat messed out of these? And, players who were important bit part players, Conceição sold his son, which is kind of mental. Sold his son.
Hey, I wanted to do that over the summer holidays too.
Yeah, exactly. It's very, it's very Abraham, isn't it? Yeah, it's Abraham on the altar. Isaac's gone to Ajax. So, Conceição's gone to Ajax. And I think what's interesting, when you look at this Porto team, is yes, obviously there are always players that are stepping up, and what we've seen is players stepping up from the academy and from the youth groups and able to kind of kick into this first team and make a difference time and time again. But this feels like a big blow. These three kind of in a 6-month period, Diaz, Vitinha and Fabio Vieira, feels like Porto have lost quite a lot of their creative hub, Sam, would be my kind of overall takeaway. The kind of flip of this is that I think they are better defensively than they were last season. They brought in David Carmo from Braga. He's a player that Liverpool were interested in a few years back. He had a nasty injury, recovered from that, played well towards the back end of last season. And then, has now come to Porto to basically be the replacement for Chancellor Mbemba. I think they're stronger at centre-back than they were last season. They've got younger, obviously, but also I just really like David Carmo. So we're at a position here where they've probably strengthened in terms of keeping goals out, but in terms of actually creating them, it feels like they're in a very odd little place.
True, but Sergio Conceição will be delighted with that because he's a notoriously cautious coach, isn't he? And the way he sets up his team, even though he has, over the last 3 or 4 years, often had the very best players in the league at his disposal and some of the best attackers that the league has ever seen in the likes of Luis Diaz. The tendency has been to be, let's not concede and build from there. Even with the very best side, even with a dominant team, he's been a bit cautious. Now, that's not a criticism because he's now won, the most silverware as a Porto manager in history is tied for first. I mean, the Super Cup win over Tondela put him right at the top of the tree. So the guy is successful, but he's cautious. So, trading out Vitinha and Fabio Vieira and Luis Diaz, but bringing in David Carmo, who is a brilliant young centre-back, he's probably delighted. We're all sat here going, where's your creativity? How are you going to serve up Mehdi Taremi for all those chances he needs? He doesn't care. He's keeping loads of clean sheets. So it's all right. But they have brought in a player, a very exciting attacking midfielder, a winger in Gabriel Veron from Palmeiras, who friend of the pod, Harry Brooks, absolutely adores and compares him to Alexis Sanchez in parts, which is always a good first step. The last player I think he compared to Alexis Sanchez was Rafinha, who has been a pretty damn good player as well. So great stock there. And that seems like the attacking spark. That's the pickup they've made. Maybe there's more business to be done. I don't know. But ultimately, with Stephen Eustachio signing permanently and presumably coming in for a bigger role, and David Carmo replacing Mbemba and massively upgrading on Mbemba, let's be honest, in defence, we're all worried about it. Conceição's probably like, yeah, this is good. I'm happy with this.
Yeah, I mean, yes, to a point, I think, is the it would be the trigger I use. You look at this midfield now, and look, Gabby Veron, I think, coming in is very, very exciting, right? And I completely agree. But when you look at this midfield, you kind of expect the starting pair now to be Stakio and Grujic, which is it's kind of sticky, isn't it? It's a sticky pair. They're not letting much go past them. And, you know, Vitinha's absence there is an interesting one. The other point to be had there is kind of, you know, how does this kind of change up through the season? And obviously we will see more players break through. Now, Romario Barro's come back from that loan spell at Estoril Praia. And I wonder if he gets those kind of minutes as the kind of rotation piece in this middle here, especially with Sergio Oliveira coming back from that loan spell at Roma and then moving straight on to Galatasaray. You know, it does feel like there's this space in this Porto squad for someone to step up. And I don't mean be a hero in terms of, you know, not going to be scoring last minute goals. I don't think that's where we're kind of at with this side at the moment. But I think it's kind of who can step up and be part of Conte Sal's unit, because that's what ultimately he's best at, right? And you have obviously Mateus Uribe in there as well, who, you know, it's going to be one of two of, you'd imagine, Uribe, Grujic, and Estacio. And I think what you're looking there is okay, who, that's fine, and that's all well and good. Who plays wide of them? Pepe had a season where he was good for the most part. Galeno didn't really break out after, you know, returning from Braga. I think more was expected of him. Maybe this is the time he gets those moments. So yeah, there's a lot to be very interested in terms of where this team look and how they look. And Ottavio will probably hold down one side. The good news for Porto fans is they've held on to Taremi and Evan Nilsson, at least while we record this. And those two are a goal-scoring phenomenon up front, and that isn't probably going to change.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. It's a really deep squad. They can look from within and ask for more from likes of the other Pepe and Wenders and Galeno stepping into the limelight a little bit more. Otavio's brilliant. Evan Nilsson is brilliant. Taremi scores 20 goals a season as long as he gets the right service, and they've signed Gabriel Veron. It's not ideal, but it's not bad at all. And given that they've bought in David Carmo for a Portuguese record internal transfer, they've got a pretty solid base to work off still. So I'm relatively optimistic still.
Yeah, okay. They are also the team to beat right now. Three titles in 5 years. It's a small dominance, but it is a dominance of Portugal right now. So they'll be looking to build on that. And look, there's more reason probably than ever for people to be watching Portuguese football too, if you get the chance, because it is the place that all the other leagues are going shopping now for their next big stars. Like, we had Bruno Fernandes that kind of set it all up. And then, yeah, obviously Luis Diaz, Darwin, Vitinha, Fabio Vieira, all just some of the names that are following them into big transfers and going to make big moves at other clubs. So, yeah, some interesting stuff. Obviously, you two were on the ball early doors with a lot of those. So, well done for making Ranks have some sort of decent reputation, because I wouldn't know who they were. We should typically go probably onto Sporting as second, but I'm not going to. I'm going to switch it over to Benfica. Sam, you know loads about Benfica, so I'm going to basically flip this, because Jack's just talked a lot, and I reckon you could probably give the lowdown on whether Benfica can mount a more serious title challenge from last season when, to be frank, they didn't really.
I think they'll be a lot better this season, but I think that's a pretty safe argument. They've made big changes, and they've brought in a new manager, Roger Schmidt, from PSV Eindhoven, formerly of Bayer Leverkusen. He's a very good manager. He is of the Red Bull stock. We've been talking about that quite a lot recently, haven't we, through the Bundesliga preview and more. There are always questions as to how that kind of management style, which wants to play in transition and using counter-pressing, how does that work when you are one of the three big, big fish in a league where the disparity of quality and the financial disparity is so stark that ultimately Benfica have, you know, a squad that is 10 or 15 times better than the bottom feeders in this league, and therefore you are naturally going to dominate the match, dominate the ball. How does that play style transition over? Well, it was pretty good with PSV, so let's see how it goes here. But what definitely helps is he gets the best out of some of the players here that I think maybe Benfica needed to get a little bit more out of, like Florentino Luis, who just hasn't really taken off. But I do have a feeling that Florentino Luis is going to be Roger Schmidt's new Ibrahim Sangare at Benfica. Just an all-action midfield patroller who just breaks things up and sends it forward. A really influential role in midfield. They've bought Enzo Fernandez from River Plate, who is like, I'm starting to wonder if maybe he might be going right to the very top. Exceptional talent. David Neres, a transfer that we absolutely love. He's already started extremely strongly in the Champions League qualifier. Gonçalo Ramos has a hat trick. Rafa Silva is still very, very good. And Morato is back as well from a long-term knee injury. He ducked out halfway through last season. He was actually one of the few bright spots, I thought, at left centre-back for Benfica last season. It was a real shame to lose him. So lots of things coming together here all at once, which is making me think that Benfica are going to be a significantly improved team this year, not just to watch, but also in terms of churning out results, closing that gap to Porto. Because, guys, it kind of got brushed under the carpet just a little bit, but because of their Champions League campaign. But last season was a disaster for Benfica. And you made that very clear there, Dean, when you just read out how far away they were from the title, from the title chase, in inverted commas. They were so far off it. What was it 17 points in the end? 11 and 6 together. It's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous margin for Benfica.
Yeah, yeah. Like 74 points in third. And yeah, Porto won it with 91. So
absolutely terrible. I know Porto, like, you know, they set a record. I get it. Like, it was a high standard. But that's galling, you know, for the great rivals to be that far apart for the red side anyway. So this has to
be. Yeah, I mean, they lost six games. They lost six games. Porto lost one game all season. So they were never going to come close to challenging for the title with that in mind. And Sporting, they lost three games. So, you know, losing six games in that division just doesn't actually give you a chance of actually winning the title.
Not at all. So much improved for Benfica, I think, in terms of signings, the managerial switch, getting more out of the players they already had, maybe out on loan, maybe elsewhere. And just, you know, a returning injury or two, I generally would be a bit more optimistic for them as well. So I think it will be a much better top three this time around in terms of how close it is.
Mm. Yeah, I'm excited about this Benfica side. And I don't see that very often. But, it does feel like he's got a system and a kind of some partnerships in here that feel like they're really starting to click already. Now, we watched them absolutely batter Midtjylland in midweek, and Enzo Fernandez scored a wonderful goal. David Neres was cooking. It was really quite enjoyable to watch. And I think this is the thing. And Gonçalo Ramos scored a hat trick, playing as the kind of lead striker. Now, reports out of Portugal suggest that Schmidt doesn't want him, and he wants to sell him,
which
because he's
no
pretty
sense
happy
to me at all. But him coming in this summer, I was looking at the striking core, and I thought, you'll love Ramos. He runs and runs and runs and runs some more. And he's only 20. He's got loads of room to improve. So the idea that they want to sell him and keep the much more kind of solitary Yaramchuk, does feel weird, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, he's scored a lot of goals in preseason. The thing is that they have three strikers. Well, I mean, I don't know how much of this is you know, the fact that there is money on the table by all accounts.
Yeah.
For Gonçalo Ramos. And also you look at this kind of squad and you think Enrique Araújo's there, Roman Yaremchuk's there. They signed Peter Musa, who was brilliant for Boavista last year. And there's someone else in this squad that just for the life of me, I can't remember his name. Is it Rodrigo Pinho? He signed last summer, who we've basically seen nothing of. But equally, you know, there's a lot of strikers in this side. And considering that it appears that the Rafa Silva has been re-engaged into this project, because there were rumours of him leaving as well. The fact that it looks like he is in this mix now, Neres is going to be there. You've got, you know, João Mário on the other side, who seems, you know, reborn again in this Benfica side. There's a lot of options here. So I can understand that if there is money on the table for one player, it's, you know, you're going to sell them. But equally, you know, he's not the player I would be selling in this setup and in this mix. But Benfica do look like they've got their stuff together. And I think it takes us on, because what we're going to see this year, and I suppose this is relatively rare, is a genuine three-horse title race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like there has been talk in Portugal of there being a three-horse race. obviously it would be handy from a neutral point of view. If that was to be the case, we want more reason to watch these leagues, and that would definitely add to the intrigue for sure. I'm just trying to get out the odds here to see how the bookies are pricing it up. Well, they've gone as you'd expect. Yeah, I was just wondering if they'd managed to push Benfica ahead of Sporting, but they haven't. They've gone Porto, then Sporting, and then Benfica.
Porting is what we're referring to in the title races last year, I think.
Porting is what you do after a big night out, mate, when you're on the port. But what chances do you give Sporting then? What's going to be their edge that could get them there?
Yeah, I quite like it. You know, I actually think that they've got some interesting, they've made some interesting business over the course of this summer. And when you kind of take into account who left, you know, obviously they've lost Palhinha, who was a kind of heartbeat of that side that won the title, not last year, the year before. They've lost some big names in here, and some names I think that maybe you'd think, okay, there's a lot of players here who didn't necessarily work out, right? You had these kind of strange moments where lots of players in here were signed with kind of big thoughts. Andras Sporra was brought in. He's been sold to Panathinaikos. Gonzalo Plata was brought in. He's been sold to Real Valladolid. They've lost a lot of the old guard have left. You know, Battaglia has left, Ribeiro's left. Sarabia's gone back to PSG in terms of that loan spell, which was, you know, widely successful, I think. And most people would agree that his time at Sporting was a success. He was very much part of the setup. Zufa Dal, who came in as kind of a leader at the back, has gone. Luis Felipe has gone. A lot of players who were kind of touted as being big moments or big players for this side have disappeared. And I think that they've lost a lot of the deadwood in this squad. Now, in terms of bringing players in, they've brought in Hidemasa Morita from Santa Clara, who was excellent last year to kind of replace what Palhinha did in the squad. He's not the same kind of player. He's nowhere near the same level of physicality, but definitely offers that kind of scurrying defensive midfield role is how I would describe it. Jeremiah Saint-Just has come in from Mainz. I think that's a really, really good pickup into this back three that Amorim looks like he's going to stick with. Pedro Porro's deal was made permanent. We've seen Trincao come in on loan from Barcelona, which kind of covers off that Sarabia loss, I think. And Rochinha was brought in from Vitória Guimarães, which is another one to, you know, keep an eye on, I think, an interesting one. But it seems like at this point, there's, you know, this Sporting squad is in a nice place. And ultimately, you're kind of looking at that and thinking, okay, last year, Porto was 6 points clear. Sporting weren't miles off it. I don't think there were questions to be asked here and there about things, but they didn't feel like they were miles off it. At the moment, it looks like Pedro Gonçalves is going to stay. Mateus Nunes is going to stay. Gonzalo Inacio is going to stay. These are, you know, players who are very, very important to this side and very important to the way that Amorim plays. And I think that when you look at how they did in Europe last season, obviously they lost eventually to Manchester City, but Manchester City are Manchester City. They beat Dortmund in the group stages. They battered Besiktas. I think, quite interestingly, they've really been shopping within the league. They brought in Marcus Edwards. Now they've brought in Rochinha, right? These are players that they can continue to weaken the teams below them or the teams trying to catch up. And I think that, you know, basically they're on a mission to make sure that Vitória Guimarães do not catch up with them. Obviously, bought Marcus Edwards. Rochinha stepped up. Bought Rochinha. So you're like, okay, thanks very much. But it just does feel like, although they have the toughest start in this league, I think very much so on paper, this is a side who, aside from the loss of Palhinha, I think, don't appear to have got particularly much worse. They've brought in different attacking options. I think they struggled a bit last year to get games over the line at times, especially against their league rivals. And what I feel like is they've diversified that attack without particularly losing all that much edge. They killed a lot of the deadwood. I just feel like Sporting are going to be in this conversation once again. And I think that's a good thing for the league in general and obviously for this fan base.
Just looking at the fixtures and look, Sporting have Braga on the opening weekend. So on Sunday, at Braga. Tough game that for Sporting. Are Braga the best of the rest, mate? I mean, we should probably just cover that. I mean, that they typically are. Is there any reason to believe that that won't be the case this time?
No, not really. They are masters of making things work, despite them, you know, continually losing players, you know, not just to the big three, but also to, you know, the rest of Europe. They lost David Carmo, which is a relatively big hit, I think, on everyone. They've also lost. They had Diogo Leite on loan from Porto last season, so it feels like they've been a little bit light in that department. What's been interesting, I think, is also you have to bear in mind that Jan Couto played a lot on the right hand side of this defense last year, and he's gone back to Manchester City for now.
He's gone on loan again now from them,
but he's not going to be back in Braga colours. What they have done is they've kind of made some smart moves. They signed Simon Banza from Lens for just under 5 million. It's the only bit of the only bit of expenditure they've actually done so far. They've brought in Diego Lainez on loan from Real Betis, which I really like. I think he's the kind of player who might just find this as his stage that he can really kind of kick things on. And they brought in Victor Gomez from Espanyol and Niakate from Guingamp, all on loan deals to kind of cover off those areas. I think this is it. It feels like the signings that have come in, you know, whether they are permanents, loans, whatever, it does feel like they have covered off the areas that were problem areas and will kick on again. Now, I don't think they're going to get any closer. I'll be honest with you. I think it's going to be a difficult ask for them to get tighter to the big three, especially with them all, as we say, either strengthening or staying still. But I can't see anyone else from the rest of this division kicking up at them. Now, there's been some kind of weird moves below them. Obviously, Gil Vicente finished fifth last year. They were a bit the kind of surprise package, enjoyable story that everyone liked. They've lost Samuel Lino to Atleti, which they got sort of 5 million for, so they'll be pleased about that. But they've brought in a couple of interesting names. They brought in Kanya Fujimoto from Tokyo, which is a bit of a random one, but they seem to have strengthened in kind of younger areas. Again, there's a lot of loan movements. It's worth pointing out probably at this point that almost nobody outside, you know, not even outside, pretty much nobody in Portugal has spent more than they've brought in this year. Everyone is in profit or like 40k of debt. It really does feel like nobody has got the money to invest in squads right now, and that's perfectly reasonable given the state of where the game is post COVID and post all of these issues that we've had. But I thought it was an interesting point to make, you know, that often the kind of movers and shakers within these divisions are actually the players that, you know, the people that do best out of free transfers, who utilize the loan market well, who are able to take young players from the big three, who can shift them onwards a little bit and make a deal. And, you know, you see this with someone like Estoril, who have spent nothing and yet have brought in six free transfers and three loans. And you're looking at the age group of this, and it's 20-year-old Titouan Thomas, 23-year-old Philippe, 21-year-old Mont Ndiaye, 26-year-old James Lea Siliki, who was at Middlesbrough last year. He's come in for free from Rennes. And then they've gone, okay, what have Benfica got to offer us? They've taken Pedro Alvaro and Thiago Araújo to kind of take off those things at centre-back and left wing. They've brought in Gonçalo Esteves from Sporting, and then they've gone to kind of Juventus to see if they can get anyone. They've picked up Alejandro Marquez, who's been good for the Juventus under-23s and is due probably a breakout moment. So Estoril interests me. I think it's kind of going to be one of those where a lot of that is dependent on how these players adapt to the league and how they adapt to senior football. They interest me, and Vitória Guimarães interests me as well. They've had a good start to their Europa Conference League campaign, despite the fact that they are absolutely bloodbath behind the scenes. Pepa, who was the manager for last season and did well, was sacked by the new club president, Antonio Cardoso, and basically they put Teixeira, the B team boss, in charge. But they did really well in their qualifier for the Conference League. They won 3-0 against Puskás. They were really good. Sam, you'll be pleased to know that there are two players in this squad called Jota and Andre Silva, and they're none of the ones that you know already. So there's another Jota. Jota V4 has turned up, ladies and gentlemen, to add to the rest. After Benfica sold Jota V3 to Celtic on a permanent deal, Jota V4 is now playing for Vitória. So that's one to keep an eye on. But aside from that, they've got another qualifier tonight, which is almost certainly going to be more difficult than their games against Puskás, but we'll see how they get on. But they are definitely ones to watch, I think, in terms of if they can push, if anyone can push Braga, I would suggest it's Vitória Guimarães.
Good stuff, yeah. Just looking at people who are listening to this, it might be that it's Friday right now. And if so, then the season begins probably right now. You might be listening to this and the season might be beginning right now.
Might have already begun. It could be
Saturday.
Already begun,
but you might be able to, straight off the back of this, find a stream or a channel showing Benfica's opening game of the season. It's 8:15 p.m. UK time on Friday. So figure it out wherever you are. Aruca, is that how you spell it? Is that how you pronounce it?
It is indeed, yeah, I think.
Is that a walk in the park for Benfica to get their season underway?
It should be, considering the quality of opposition they've come up against in the Champions League. But, you know, no game is a gimme. But especially opening day. But yeah, you'd suggest that Benfica get off to a winning start on Friday night. Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. Nice one, lads. Appreciate that. That'll probably be the last Portuguese content we do all season, but it was fun. I'm kidding. It'll be the last Portuguese content I do all season. Sorry.
Let me just rephrase that. Yeah, exactly.
I'm kidding. No, nice one, lads. And thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back. We still got previews to do. What have we got left next week? We've got Spain and Italy.
Yeah, we haven't decided in which order we're going to do them yet. So that's up for debate. But on Monday and Wednesday, respectively, we're going to have Serie A and La Liga episodes. So they're going to be very exciting. I'm very excited about talking about those two leagues. I think they're going to be brilliant seasons in both. So a lot to be excited for next week. Thank you if you've listened to all of these previews. We appreciate, one, your commitment and dedication, and two, thank you for helping us out and giving us the listens that keep this podcast going. Dean, do you want to do the thank yous?
Stolen the host duty. Back off him.
It's automatic. I was like, yes, just revert to type here, Jack. Just wrap up this podcast. This is your job.
Reins out of your hands. I saw it.
I'm quite happy.
It was seamless as well.
Yeah, it was. Like, I was hoping you were just going to seamlessly just cut off the episode and we were done.
Well, now we've spent a minute talking about it, so that's ruined it.
Yeah, it kind of has ruined it, but here we are anyway. We're gonna finish it off. All that's left for me to do is say thank you very much to host Dean Jones.
I offered so much. Cheers.
Thank you very much, Sam Tai.
Cheers, buddy.
I've been Jack Collins. This has been Ranks FC with our Portuguese Primeira season preview. We hope you have enjoyed all the bonus content this week. We'll be back next week talking about Serie A and La Liga. Have wonderful weekends. Enjoy the start of all of these seasons, and we'll see you on Monday. Take it easy. Peace.